you know, when a song was released, it was on a record, you know, and you know, the record labels would create these remixes and vet the remixers. And, you know, now in, you know, you have SoundCloud and you have, you know, all these bootleg mixes and, you know, you get your hands on the acapella to any song and do a remix. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, you have a lot of really kind of amateur, you know, not good sounding remixes that are just kind of out there, and it's very difficult to weed through the quality stuff as opposed to just the stuff that just sounds terrible.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Season 2.
Uh-huh.
Yo, Lewis.
Y'all ready?
Just musically
Yo,
speaking.
Yo, Pedro. What's good?
Check. I'll let the music talk to you like Lou and P. Pedro got that vision so your mind can see. Lewis got them ideas, let them out me free. We got the whole industry speaking musically. Season 2, every episode is popping with facts. You can get behind the scenes of the acts and tracks. All the drama in between, work it out and relax. We talk about the real shit and the wax contracts. So turn it up, light it up, AirPods and beats. It's musically speaking.
Pedro Lewis and me.
Turn it up, light it up, AirPods and beats. It's musically speaking.
Pedro Lewis and me. Let's get it.
Ha ha, let's go. Ha ha, start the show.
Ha, yeah,
yeah.
I tell, I bless you.
Uh huh, uh huh.
Welcome to another episode of Musically Speaking, the podcast. My name is Lewis. On this episode, our good friend Pedro had an opportunity to interview a renowned mix show DJ named DJ James Anthony. He's best known for his work as a mix show DJ for KTU 103.5 FM in New York, one of my favorite stations. Pedro had an opportunity to chat it up with James, talk about his career, talk about where his music is going, and what projects he has ahead. So let's jump right into it.
We're hanging out right now with DJ James Anthony. We were just talking about...
Hey, what's up, James?
First of all, welcome.
What's up, guys? What's going on?
We're all quarantining here. We were just talking about how you are pretty active on social media, and you've been kind of letting people know what you've been doing. My question is, how did that even come about? Mm-hmm. Like, what was your thought process behind it? Because you're really consistent. Every day, you tell everybody what you're up to. But what was that thought behind that? And how have you been able to actually keep doing it? Because it's hard to keep that up.
What? Just in terms of social media presence, you mean?
Just keeping everybody informed of what you're up to during you know, quarantining and being consistent with that. Because it's not easy to... keep that up. I mean, what are you up to, like 50 days or so, telling people what you're up to?
Actually, I kind of slowed down with the quarantine diary because it just got, after a while, I kind of ran out of things to say I was doing because I'm doing the same thing every day, you know?
Yeah. But I agree, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I have a lot of free time now, so I have a lot of music to work on. So I figure if I'm going to work on music, I might as well just tell people what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah. And there was one particular project which we're going to highlight later was Aubrey Standstill, which you decided, was this a project that you were working on and kind of put to the side and then came back to? I love that song, by the way. It reminds me of being a much younger, energetic guy.
But, me too.
But tell us about that track. Tell us about how that project came about.
So the Aubrey track, sometimes just for fun, I like to take classics and do remixes of them just, you know, for me to play out when I'm at the clubs and everything. And I did that track like about a little over a year ago. And it's just one of the things, like I did like 90% of it. And then I kind of just like, I pushed it aside to work on other things and I kind of never came back to it. And a couple weeks ago, the original version came on shuffle for me. And I was like, oh, I'm like, you know, I did a remix of this a year ago. I should go back to it and finish it and see, you know, see if I could put it out there. So, you know, and listen, the lyrics to that song are very much relevant to what we're living through right now. So I figured, why not? You know, this will be a good project to kind of finish.
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw that you were talking about that song, it did make a lot of sense. I never really thought of that song in that way, mm-hmm. but now I'm like, man, this makes a lot of sense. It is such a good anthem, and you modernized it in mm-hmm. a way. You said mm-hmm. that the song, the remix was about 90% complete.
Yes.
But it sounds very modern. When did you start actually working on this project?
Well, originally about a year, a little over a year ago, and then I went back to it maybe about 2 weeks ago, and I just kind of stripped it of, you know, everything that I was kind of like, eh, I can make this sound better, I can make that sound better. I mean, it's all structured the same as it was before, but it was just a matter of like changing up the instrumentation a little bit and simplifying the drums a little bit. The drums were kind of all over the place before. So sometimes I have trouble editing myself as far as, you know, I want to throw everything into the mix, and then once it's done, I'm like, all right, I got to take some of this out to streamline it a little bit. So, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that, because I don't think a lot of casual fans understand the mind of a producer or a DJ who, like yourself and many others who we talk to, very perfectionist. So, What do you do? You're working on a project. You hear a bunch of stuff. Does it make sense to you to like put it to the side, get back to it later? How do you, tell us a little bit about that process of make finally saying this is complete, this is a good song?
Well, normally what I'll do is I'll kind of add everything in, and then I just go back and I keep listening to it, and then I'm like I'll usually start with all the drums, and I kind of like, as I'm sequencing the drums, I'm like, oh, that sounds good. Let me put that in. And then I go back and I'm like, okay, actually this could go, you know, this, oh, sorry. That was my alarm telling me that I had to call in.
Very adult of you.
Yeah. Well, no, because I'm so bad with stuff like that. I have to remind myself. But no, but that's how I do it, is I kind of put everything in and then I'll start taking it out. And once I kind of find that right balance of like, okay, this is perfect. That's, you know, but it's a lot of, let's just put it this way. By the time I finish one of those tracks, I never want to listen to it again, because I've listened to it 80 million times already, you know? Mm.
That's how I feel about my shows. I don't really listen to my shows often.
I don't listen to anything I do. After it's done, maybe, no, you know what I do? The one thing I do listen to is the freestyle edits. Because when I go do my cardio, I like to listen to freestyle when I do cardio. So I'll go back and I'll listen to my edits. That's the one thing. But all the house stuff I do, once it's done, I never want to hear it again.
Mm-hmm. That's really funny, because I never really asked anyone if they listen to their own stuff. And I can imagine that you don't, because you are beating it to death. But here's an interesting question, James. Do you listen to something later? Like, let's say 10 years down the line, you'll be like, oh, my God, I don't remember making this, or I don't remember hearing this. And do you judge yourself like you judge your old self with your new self when you listen to your projects?
Oh, I listen to stuff I did a year ago and I think it sucks, you know? I mean, honestly though, there's some things that, I mean, listen, I still listen to a lot of my old stuff in the sense that when I'm out DJing, I play them in the clubs. So I'm still listening to them. I'm just not listening to them casually, like in my car or in my earbuds. But no, I mean, listen, there's mixes that I did years ago that I think still sound really good. A lot of them, I don't like the way they sound. But that's just because, you know, the more you produce, the more you learn how to do things. And the more, you know, for me, it's mostly like I've learned how to master tracks a lot better. Like, I listen to a lot of the old stuff I did, and it's not so much that it's amateur sounding, like musically it sounds fine. It's just that I didn't really have a good ear up until a couple of years ago on how to really properly EQ things and how to really master a track in full. Whereas now I'm kind of, I could do that much more effectively now than I could before.
How did that process happen? Because it seems to me that everybody goes through that same evolution of, they listen to the sounds, they kind of get that part, they have a good feel for music, but then getting to the point of mastering and doing all those little things that make a song good to great seems to evolve over time. How did that process work for you to get to that point?
I can honestly tell you that of this entire journey of learning how to be a producer over the past, I don't know, like 12 years or so, I've been doing productions. It's been the most frustrating aspect of it. Some people naturally, like me, I naturally have an ear for musicality. So I know how to do a melody, do everything musically, but the technical aspect is what has never come easy to me. You know, and there are times that I would finish a track and I think it sounds great. And, you know, I work with Tony Moran a lot on projects, and I'll send it to someone like Tony, and I'll say, hey, I think this sounds great. And he'll be like, actually, your drums are too, you know, your high ends are too high. The bass is fighting the vocals. You need to compress this better. You need to do that. So that's, you know, it's frustrating as hell, but I feel like now I have a little bit better of a understanding of it all.
And do you think, and I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but I think for everybody else, do you think that that just comes with trial and error and time and some good mentors?
Yeah, big time. It's a combination of all that. And like even now, I mean, you know, even the Aubrey track, I have to, you know, when I finish that track and I say, okay, this is now I got to just finish mastering it. I'll go, you know, I have to listen to, there's certain ways that I do it. Like first I listen to it in my earbuds, then I go listen to it in the truck, you know, because you know, in my truck I have a really good sound system, so I'll listen to it there. Like I have to listen to it in different places and really, because you catch things, you know, you like when you listen to something in your earbuds, it sounds different than when you listen to it in a truck or on, you know, on big speakers. So I wind up having to bounce the track 10 times, 12 times, 15 times, where every time you're just tweaking just a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And it's, and I hate doing it. And like by the 10th go around, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, whatever it sounds like now, I'm done, you know? But it's tedious and it's difficult. But I mean, listen, if you're going to put your music out there, it has to sound good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to embarrass yourself. Especially. Yeah, I mean, especially for someone like yourself, because you are also, you know, you're a DJ by trade. So you're out there and you are playing music to the masses. Let's go back in time a little bit before all this corona stuff happened. You're out there. Tell us about the scene of DJing, right? You know, before all of this happened. How did, you know, you're a big circuit guy. You're out there. What were you seeing? What were you kind of feeling as you were out there kind of DJing and getting a feel for what the summer should have been like in terms of music?
Well, I think, you know, in the summertime, you tend to, I mean, I do a lot of outdoor parties in the summer. I do a lot of tea dance stuff, a lot of daytime parties, a lot of pool parties. So, you know, there you gravitate more towards those kind of happy house records with a lot of pianos and kind of very simple drums and nice vocals and, whereas, you know, the nighttime parties are a little bit more that. But I think, you know, lately there's been a lot more diversity in the sets that I play. You know, I'm very much into tech house now. I'm very much into future house. Like, and I try to incorporate as much of that as I can into my live sets. So I try to do a little bit of everything, but while still kind of maintaining a coherent sound throughout the night so that people don't just, you know, walk off the dance floor. You know, it's a balance.
And I think that's key, leaning towards balancing. It's a balancing act that you have to as a DJ. What do you think is your, and you talk about this a lot when you're out there DJing, kind of pet peeves and things like that, but what do you feel like this generation that doesn't, you know, everything is kind of at their fingertips. What do you, you know, what are the things that you're seeing as a DJ that kind of was bugging you, that you were like, this isn't working. I don't understand what's wrong in this sense.
I think the biggest problem with the music scene as it is today, and I think this kind of crosses, you know, from freestyle to house to all these different genres, is that, you know, back in the day, you know, when a song was released, it was on a record, you know, and you know, the record labels would create these remixes and vet the remixers. And, you know, now in, you know, you have SoundCloud and you have, you know, all these bootleg mixes and, you know, you get your hands on the acapella to any song and do a remix. And on one hand, that's great because it allows people to be creative. It allows producers. I mean, listen, that Aubrey track, I wouldn't have been able to do it if the acapella didn't exist out there, which, you know, the original remix package happened to have the acapella. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, you have a lot of really kind of amateur, you know, not good sounding remixes that are just kind of out there. And it's very difficult to weed through the quality stuff as opposed to just the stuff that just sounds terrible, you know? And I'm not knocking anybody else's work. I mean, everybody's learning, everybody learns different ways, everybody's at a different stage in their journey as a musician and a producer, but it's just, it's a lot to just go through all the garbage, you know, and there's a lot of garbage out there, to be honest.
And I think that that's been a situation that people have been talking about for a long time now, because there's a plus and there's a minus with all this freedom that's out there.
But it's the freestyle world, right?
Yeah, I mean, freestyle, EDM. I mean, even in EDM, I mean, you're talking about, on our show, we probably listen to hundreds and hundreds of tracks. And for us to pick out what we want people to hear has become a daunting task, with remixes upon remixes upon all kinds of things going on. But,
well, that's the other problem too, is that, you know, there's also so much good music, you know, and it's, you know, whereas back in the day you had like your A-list anthems that would come out, you knew all the big artists, like, you knew you had your Deborah Cox records and your Whitney Houston records, and but now it's like there's a lot of really great music, but it's just, there's just too much of it, you know. I mean, like, if I could spend days just going through the music that gets sent to me in my inbox, you know, I belong to all those different record pools and promo drops and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to listen to, if I listen to 10% of the stuff that's sent to me every day, that's a lot. It's just too much.
And that's a very good point. I remember there was a time, we're talking about probably early 2000s, where there were certain things that you could listen to and you knew you were going to get the best. I mean, Stand Still, it stands out for me, because it came from, I heard it from the New York City Underground set, which those things you look forward to every year, and you are going to get top quality stuff there. And then you kind of made your way through there. James, do you feel like there's just not a place where you can go and, you know, does streaming kind of kill some of that, where you could just say, look, this compilation is going to give me what I'm looking for, and you can kind of go from there, or you just have to kind of figure it out yourself now?
Well, listen, streaming is the way, it's how people younger, I mean, you know, we come from a certain generation, you know, the kids, I'm saying kids, you know, people under the age of 30, really, you know, that's really what they know is streaming. They don't know buying song. I mean, people don't even really buy songs on iTunes anymore. They just stream it on Spotify, which, you know, I do it too. It's actually, you know, I follow like the Future House playlist, the Deep House playlist, and what I, you know, my listening habits have changed in the sense that I'll kind of leave it on in the background while I'm working, and every once in a while a song will catch my ear and I'll be like, oh, what is that? That sounds good. And I'll like it, so I can go back to it. And, you know, that, and the songs that I really like, or that I think like, oh, I want to make a record that has that kind of sound to it, those are the tracks that I will go and purchase or download or, you know, get from the label or whatever. And though, you know, so I there is still a way to kind of like figure out what you really like. You just have to have the patience and the ability to kind of just like go through it all. But streaming is it, man. That's how people listen to music now. That's it.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about now. I mean, right now, folks are kind of at home, just like we are. We can't really get out too much. Our regular life has been interrupted in some way.
Yep.
How does that translate to someone like yourself? You know, you have work besides your regular work that is based on being out in the public. I mean, what now? You know, what are your thoughts on what may happen once this kind of calms down?
Well, I mean, I don't know. This whole thing is very strange and very surreal, and in many ways I feel like we're still in the middle of it all. Like I kind of think of it as like a slow motion 9/11 in a way. You know, the psychological effects of it are very strange. I have days where, I mean, listen, I wake up every morning and I think to myself, okay, what am I going to do today? You know, I don't have any, like some days, like when it was still kind of cold out, I would just get in my car and drive around for an hour because I just didn't know what to do with myself. You know, I mean, I'm working from home full time with my regular job, but, you know, I could kind of do my job when I want to do my job. So I don't have to sit in front of my laptop from 9 to 5 every day. So, you know, so I kind of feel like in some ways I should be working on music every day. From the minute I wake up to the minute I go to bed, I should be working on music. There's so much I could do. But the problem and the thing I've really discovered is that there's a lot of days where you're just not in a creative mindset. I just can't do it. Like, as much as I say, like, all right, I want to sit down today and work on this song, I sit down in front of it and I'm like, no, not today. I got nothing.
And I haven't talked to too many people about this, but you made an excellent point. And do you feel like there's some sort of, I don't know, stigma or something out there that says, well, you have all this time now, you need to be working on something, or you need to learn a new language, or you need, like, is, you think that there's a lot of that going on right now, where everybody's like, well, you need to be doing something. 50 days later, you're still like, I don't know what's happening.
From a recipe on YouTube. No, listen, I mean, listen, everybody deals with this differently. I mean, this is very traumatic. I mean, again, I think this is traumatic for people in ways that we don't even really comprehend yet, because we're still in the middle of it. You know, it's 2 months to the day. I just thought of this today. Today is 2 months to the day. The last time I went into the city and went to work, I was like, oh my God, like, I haven't been in Manhattan in 2 months. Like, I've been working in Manhattan for 16 years. I haven't been there in 2 months. But listen, everybody deals with this differently, and some people are learning new languages, and that's great. And some people are sitting around depressed. And I mean, I don't know. I can't really speak for anybody else. I mean, I know for me personally, I'm trying to do what I can with music, because it's really my only creative outlet right now. But listen, there's some days that I'm just going to lay on the couch and, you know, smoke a joint and watch TV. I mean, it is what it is, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and whatever I think that's one of the things that, and it's good to hear it from someone like yourself who's still working, but not in a way where you're like 100% balls to the wall. It's important for everybody to realize that there's going to be some days where you're just not going to be all there. One of the last things I'll ask you is something that I'm always curious to know about people in your line of work is, what do you think the music is going to be like at some point? I mean, you're looking at 2020 being almost canceled in a sense, but eventually things do progress. What is that going to look like? What is music going to sound like? What do you think? It's going to be regular? What do you know? What do you think?
Well, in some ways, I think we're going to pick up right where we left off. But no, I feel like, I think that we're going to have a lot of happy music, a lot of positive music, a lot of retro sounding stuff, maybe like Dua Lipa. The new Dua Lipa album is a good example, because I think that people in traumatic times like this, they appreciate nostalgia, because it reminds them of a simpler time before all this bullshit. So my prediction is that things are going to be happy and retro sounding. That's my,
I like
that.
I
could be wrong. I don't know.
Well, I think it was kind of leaning towards that way, as you probably know. Music was taking, it always takes about a 15-20 year leap. So at this point, a lot of music that we were listening to was leaning towards 80s, early 90s. I mean, and people have really responded well to that in terms of what people are listening to, you know.
Yeah, people are listening to freestyle music again. Who knew, you know?
Yeah.
So that's also a point. I want to make sure that people know how to get a hold of your music. You do something really cool. I want you to talk about this. You have your page where you did something amazing. And for those who aren't from New York City, you taped a ton of those KTU shows.
Oh, yeah. Because those are my shows. I taped them all. I was such a loser. I was like 21 years old. I was on the radio. I was like, I needed documentation of every mix I ever did on KTU.
And those are good mixes, by the way. And I remember clearly, this is a pretty cool story. The party's over at Backdrafts in Queens.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was so long ago. How old are we?
I was not quite legal yet. But
neither was I.
I remember
sneak me in, like Niaja would like sneak me in.
shout out to DJ Rio Lopez. I was his roadie, and I would bring all his stuff in before the place shut down. It used to be a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And one day you were DJing, and this was when you were doing KTU stuff, and Mickey Garcia was there. It was a big night, and I'm not gonna lie, a lot of people enjoyed your set the most, and you were in the beginning. You know, Ricky Garcia came in later, and a lot of people didn't know who you were at the time. They're like, who's that kid?
I was a kid. It was very much a kid. I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was just gonna say that was for me, you were like kind of in my range there because we were both kids kind of enjoying this music and being around a bunch of older folks.
I will say this about those days. I have never been happier to DJ as I was when I first started doing those freestyle events, because you have to understand, I mean, that was the music I was so passionate about. I grew up with that music. I played those records to death. So when I started, you know, my show on KTU, that was amazing and huge for me. But when I would go to Backdraft, Backdraft was before I was on KTU.
Backdrafts, you went after. You started Backdrafts before you got to KTU, and then eventually you became the kid from KTU that played at Backdraft, so people were saying that you were discovered there. What's the story?
Yeah, perhaps I was. But no, I was. I just remember being so excited. I would like, you know, and you know, I would have to bring my records. So I would like go through. I know all my freestyle records up there. I'd like go through them. Like, okay, I'm only gonna take one crate with me. What records do I want to take? You know, which Cynthia records do I want? Do I want Miss Nice? Do I want the Hearts? So, and it was always like a Sophie's Choice of like which records to bring.
Wow.
But I was so excited to play those parties. And that was a little bar. It was like, maybe 100 people. I don't know. But like Mickey would be there, like, you know, Niasia would be there, and like just random freestyle artists with Fascination was there. And it was my first time meeting these people. And I was like, I idolized these people growing up. And now I'm playing their records in front of them. Like, to this day, when I think about it, I'm like, my mind was blown. And some people are like, what's the big deal? I mean, who are these artists? Who really cares? I do a plan for Madonna or whoever. But yo, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, we were young. So I don't think people understand that we were also listening to this music with a bunch of emotions in our heads. So we go over there and we're singing the song to, you know, with our hearts on our sleeve, and the person who performed it is right there.
Yeah. And the other thing too is that, you know, the internet was really, I mean, it was 2001, so the internet was there, but there was no social media. There wasn't as much of a community and a way for people to connect the way that they do now. I mean, we had, remember like clubfreestyle.com, like we had the
stuff.
But you know, to go to a place like Backdrafts and meet all these people who had the same passion for this music as you did, like, you know, it was really something special, because you didn't have Facebook and SoundCloud and Twitter and Instagram. So to meet these people in person, that, like, you knew who they were, like, from a message board, but to say like, oh my God, yeah, you're so-and-so. It was like, it was just like, I remember the very first time I went to Backdrafts, I was probably about 19 years old or so. And I don't know if you remember Steve Barbarisi. Steve Barbarisi, he lived on the island. So Steve Barbarisi, now listen, I was like 20. I had never driven to Queens before. Like, you know, the furthest I really went was Brooklyn. So I was on Staten Island. So Steve Barbarisi was like, hey, listen, I'll drive you. And I remember my parents like, who is this person that you're driving to? I mean, I was still living at home at the time, so I still was kind of answering to my parents. I wasn't quite 21 yet, but I just remember like him. I remember him coming to pick me up, and like my parents kind of looking out the window, like, "Who is this person? Like, where are you going? Like, what are they?" But I remember walking in there for the first time, and I remember I met Niasia was one of the first people I met, and she was so nice, and I was just like, "Oh my God! Like you're Niasia. You sing Who's Got Your Love?" Like,
yeah, I remember having a dance off with her and everything. And when I got there, at some point, going to Backdrafts, people knew who I was just because they were like, "Oh, freestyle!" You know, you walk in there, they had you a drink. Mm-hmm. They were like, "What songs you want to listen to?" Yep. And they would play the stuff I like. And I figured I'd tell this story since you're here. There was one time I was going to Backdraft's party, and a good friend of mine, Adele, who's known as Corrupted, who lives near me, near me in Queens.
Yes.
He was like, "Yo, we can't go yet. I got to go pick up somebody." Mm-hmm. And I was like, sure, I'm all dressed up. I'm in his car. We drove to Flushing and picked up Nelson Cruz.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Nelson. Mm.
And, you know, Nelson's a tall guy. So,
yeah.
You know, Dell had a very tiny BMW, and he gets in there. He barely gets in, makes fun of him. He's like, what the hell are you doing? Oh, you're picking me up in a clown car?
That's and so we funny. Get,
and then we drive over, and he was performing. He wasn't performing, but he shows up to Backdrafts, and they're like, yo, you want to sing? He was like, sure. He's legit's there.
And that used to happen with so many artists. They just show, they would just be there, and like Artie would be there and be like, Artie, you want to sing? Yeah, sure. Like,
yeah, it was one of those moments where it's very hard to explain because there's so much myth around it. But I love it because without all the social media that you have right now, all you have are the stories to tell. And I think that's the last batch of groups, or at least time frame, where you can get that. After that, the internet exploded, and that was the end of that, I think.
Yeah, so, freestyle.com. That was
big. Those forums. People don't know too much about forums, but that was a great way. I loved freestyle so much, and my friends had no idea. They were all hip hop heads and rock.
Yeah.
They're like, why do you like this crap? Except for a couple buddies of mine who had older brothers and sisters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was like, I need more friends that like this music. And it became kind of a community, man. But it's good to reminisce. I think that this is what we need right now, just to kind of talk about this kind of stuff. And for those who don't know, I don't know what to tell you. I don't think there's a lot of internet out there about Backdrafts, but it's like a beer hooker now.
I have a whole bunch of pictures. I know where they are. They're in a box. I will scan them and send it to you. And maybe we could like send it around to the people who used to go and see, like, you know, people can tag themselves in the pictures. It's always a trick. Somebody tagged me and my partner in a photo from like 16 years ago, like at a club. Wow. And I don't have a lot of pictures of us from back then. Cause again, back then you didn't have digital cameras back then. You didn't have smartphones back then. So when you took pictures back then, you had either like a disposable camera or like one of those big clunky digital cameras that was like the size of like a brick, you know?
Yeah.
And so that, like, to see pictures from back then, it's like, you know, you don't realize, like, people didn't take a lot of pictures in clubs and bars back then because nobody wanted to walk around with a, you know, big Kodak thing, you know?
Yeah. It was a photographer. Honestly, I took pictures for the first few times that I went because I was so starstruck.
Me too. That's where I took pictures. I bought a little digital, a disposable camera. Mm-hmm. And then you got to get the film developed and, you know.
Yeah. Yep. Eventually, and this is, I think, one of the things that is missing in today's world is everybody's so into making sure that they capture the moment that they forget the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would take a few pictures. None of them had me in it, which tells you how much I cared about myself. It was always everybody else, and then it was maybe for the first hour. Once the music started playing and it was maybe 11, I was dancing till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and it's just the music. Yep. Yeah, I remember.
And I want people to get into that some more. When this all kind of dies down, I think people should really embrace the moment, man. If you're going to go out to the park, if you're going to go out to a concert, if you're going to go out to an event, soak that all in. Take your pictures real quick just to make sure that you know you're there. But that's it, man. Enjoy it. You don't need to have your camera out filming everything.
I agree.
That's true.
I mean, I always find it funny when, like, you know, you see people like on 4th of July watching fireworks shows and they're like this with their phones. Why are you taking video of a fireworks show? Who's going to watch this? Like, wait.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of that myself a little bit. I remember going to see Eminem in a private show. And I was so, it was like, Eminem was like maybe 20 feet away from me. And I had my phone out maybe for like a few seconds of a song.
Yeah, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. You know,
it was a bunch of diehard fans. And all we did was like sing along to every single thing he had. And it was such a good moment. It felt really natural, which I think is missing a little bit sometimes in these days.
Yeah.
Well, this concludes this episode of Musically Speaking, the podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Please share, like, subscribe, and we will catch you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to Musically Speaking with your hosts, Lewis and Pedro. Be sure to visit musicallyspeakingpodcast.com for show notes, past episodes, and our blog. Please subscribe, like, or share with a friend. Till next time.